Welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for August 13th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and back with me is Jim Bolt Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Bolt. I feel like Deadbolt, baby.
Deadbolt. No, man, alive and striking.
Striking out. We'll be talking a lot about strikeouts today.
All right, well, this week we've got a chat with Bobby Scales of the Oryx Buffaloes. We're going to discuss errors and touch on some other topics, so let's start clearing the bases. All right, so a couple of weeks ago, I got to talk to Bobby Scales of the Oryx Buffaloes. We met out at Sabre Dome and sat down with him, and he was on the show last year. He was on Volume 1, Number 23, show number 23, if you want to go back and listen. And last year, it seemed like he was determined to play the game his way, his style, the way he had been raised in the game. And this year it seems like he's more open and accepting of Japanese baseball. And you'll hear that in the interview. But, yeah, he's an interesting guy in that another thing you'll hear in the interview, he plays a lot of positions. And I didn't realize when I did the research last year, I thought that he was basically just an infielder. I didn't look so much at the positions, and I didn't realize that he played a lot of outfield.
Right.
And this is a classic case of a guy who just knows how to be a professional, in my opinion. He's not great at any one thing in particular. He's a good defender. He has good speed. He's hitting a respectable 272 at the moment. He's just shy of, his on-base percentage is just shy of 400. But he's got a team high of 69 strikeouts, you know, and he's a mid-season pickup. Not mid-season, but he was a late pickup. He didn't start the season there, so he really shouldn't be leading them in strikeouts. He's got 37 walks. He's an interesting player. Interesting guy.
He is an interesting guy. He speaks really well, so looking forward to hearing this.
He's got this little foot twist thing that he does when he's trying to time the pitchers. Have you noticed that? He's a switch hitter, so he does it from both sides of the plate. He puts that front foot out and kind of twists. You know B.J. Upton of the Tampa Bay Rays?
I know of him.
He's got another foot twist thing that I guess he's using it to, you know, get his timing down, and I don't like it. I think it's something that pitchers could use that as far as timing and try to throw his timing off. But it's interesting that he does it from both sides of the plate. I've never seen a switch hitter like that who does that little foot thing. B.J. Upton is more, his is more pronounced. I mean, it's more obvious that he's doing something strange with his front foot, and you can see it. It's actually annoying. Bobby's is a little more subtle. But you can still tell that he's doing it.
Does it look like Tito Fuentes or something?
not that much, but it is there, and it is something that you can notice. So,
well, you remember Tito Fuentes, so that's a point.
Thank you. All right, so you want to go ahead and check out the interview?
Yeah, let's listen.
All right, our guest this week is Bobby Scales. He's back in Japan after playing with the Nippon Ham Fighters last year. He's with the Oryx Buffaloes this year for a second stint. And what brought you back to Japan?
Well, I had opportunity. I went to spring training with the Chicago Cubs. Ended up getting my release from the Cubs. The roster situation there in AAA, it wasn't favorable. So I went, took a proactive step and asked for my release. And then New York Mets were gave me an opportunity to play in Buffalo. And I was doing well, playing really well, and hoping to get called up because they were kind of a mess at the time. And then the phone started ringing.
When did the Mets not a mess? I'm sorry. Sorry about the Mets, man.
Yeah, right. You got me there. But no, we're good. This team called, and about 10 days later, I was back over here. So, to be quite honest, I have the opportunity to play here and take better care of my family. AAA money is not bad now, but it's not like playing here in Japan. So, was it an easy decision? No. Decisions like that never are, but my wife was on board, and that was the main thing, and so we made the move.
All right, now being in the Pacific League again means you're familiar with most of the pitchers that you see, but what adjustments have you had to make this second stint?
They know you too. So, the same kind of weaknesses or the same things they felt like were weaknesses, they're going to attack. And so you have to know that and be cognizant of that. But also at the same time, you have to understand you work on your weaknesses, but you also continue to work on your strengths. And you know where your strengths lie. And hopefully you get, you know, pitches in those zones. And then the ones that they perceive you to be weak on, you can handle those too. So, it's always, baseball is a game of adjustments no matter where you are. So it's always a constant adjustment.
Now, you played in the outfield as opposed to playing on the infield. I don't know how much you played in the States.
Right. I played quite a bit outfield, actually, over there. You know, early on in my career, I was tabbed as a utility guy because it seemed like there was always a prospect that played second or third or short. So, you know, a skipper said, hey, you know, I'm in double A 1 year. Skipper said, hey, you play center field, yep. I can go out there. You play first, yep. You know, those were four at-bats. You know, I didn't know where I was getting four more. So, I played quite a bit. Matter of fact, if you look at my numbers in the big leagues, I might have played more outfield than I did infield. It could be I'm not quite sure on that, but it's close. So, I'm comfortable out there. You know, I've made some mistakes out there this year. But you know what? You're gonna make mistakes. It's the game. The question is, what do you do the next time? So, I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid to make mistakes. I'm not afraid of diving for balls and challenging, different challenges. So, I feel comfortable out there.
Now, the Buffaloes are a different team than the Fighters in many ways, but what are some of the differences that you've seen between this club and the Fighters?
Well, when I got here, we were so piecemeal together. I mean, everybody was hurt. You know, part of the reason I'm here is because T.O. Okada and Sakaguchi got hurt around the same time. T's back. I don't know what Sakaguchi's situation is. I don't know if he's out for the year or whatever, but, you know, guys were hurt, and they were scuffling to score runs, and so in that regard, we were scuffling score runs last year. So in that regard, we're very similar. Obviously, the Fighters are a different team this year without Darvish. So our pitching was outstanding last year. Pitching here has been good. We just, again, we have had a hard time scoring runs. You know, after the All-Star break has been better. But, you know, what's funny is that they're different clubs, but they're still similar, you know, in the same regard. And the reason that I ended up here is because they were scuffling score runs and needed someone to spark the offense. So, different, obviously, but very similar. So the game's played fairly the same across the board here in Japan, so there's not much adjustment in that regard.
And tell me something about some of your teammates that you thought about them as an opponent that you learned more about as a teammate.
That's a good question. You just see numbers and jerseys and stuff. For me, you look at pitchers, you just see stuff. When you're on the other side, a guy I love is Nishi for us. I call him Gugu because he's like a little baby, little pudgy kid, you know. But and he smiles at you all the time. And on the mound, you think he's like smirking at you, like he's saying, "I got you here." That's just who he is. The kid walks around with a smile all the time, and he's pudgy. He's got a little spare tire around. You know, he does his work. He works his tail off. But the thing I love about him is when he gets on the mound, the dude is a competitor. And he gets in there and he grinds and he wants pitches. And we were down in Fukuoka and somebody hit a little bloop to left and I ended up diving and catching it. And there was a runner on third and he couldn't score. And it was late. It was the eighth inning. And
I think I saw that.
Yeah. And, you know, he wanted it so bad the dude practically hugged me when I got to the dugout. And it was like, he's like, kept telling me, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm like, man, it's what I'm supposed to do. You know, it's about us winning. It's not about, you know, you winning or me making it. It's about us winning the game, and that helped win the game. So, you know, you don't have to thank me. That's what your position players are supposed to do. So, but I enjoy all my teammates. I really enjoy him. I love Deho Lee, even though he wasn't here last year.
Mm-hmm.
But that dude, first of all, he can flat hit.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. You know, you see him out there, you're like, okay, he's just a, you know, little league terms, he's just a fat kid that can hit. But
I call him the pudgy pumper.
But the big boy's got good feeder on the bag. He can pick it. He's a good baseball player. You know, he just happens to look like an offensive lineman. You know, so, and he's hilarious. He's one of the funniest guys I've come across. You know, just enough English to be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. He's a good dude, and I enjoy being around him. I enjoy playing with him.
Now, I know you had a weight loss problem. Like, last year you were losing weight at a fast rate, especially during the summer. So, how are you solving that problem, and how are you dealing with it this year?
Well, you just learn. You know, second time around, it's easier. You know, I'm crushing Cliff protein bars. You know, if there's a Cliff representative out there, you know, we want a little reciprocal.
Stop it. No, go ahead. No. Right ahead.
No,
Cliff.
I'm kidding. No,
no Cliff.
I'm eating.
Call us up.
That's right. Yeah, right. I'm eating Cliff bars like it's my job and you know, getting as much protein in me as I can, you know, and I'm getting in the weight room a little bit more than I did last year, honestly. You know, it's better. I'm down a couple pounds, but I'm supposed to be down a couple pounds at this point in the year. So I'm not altogether upset. Last year, this time, I was probably down 4 or 5, and I ended up losing 8. when I was over here. Just because the food's different. And, you know, you've been here 20 years now. The food is just different. And honestly, living in Osaka, where we are, it's a lot easier to be foreign there than it was in Sapporo. Sapporo was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Great people, very nice.
I get you.
Very clean city, but it's difficult to be foreign there. With, you know, after the game, there's no spread, as there is in the United States. Mm-hmm. So there's no spread. You know, you had a choice between McDonald's and Pizza Hut after games.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know, really. So there's a lot. There's a couple of restaurants in Osaka that you go to on the way home that are open, English menus, people in there speak English, and there's stuff that I'm more accustomed to eating. So it's been a lot easier this year.
All right, now there's still 3 months left in the season. Tell me how you guys can get back in this thing.
Playing solid baseball, quite honestly. I mean, that's the thing. It's weird. It's the weird thing about having a six-team league is you're never out of it, but at the same time, it's tough when other teams are just beating up on each other. It's tough to gain ground. So we need to hit a big winning streak. We need an 8, 9, 10 gamer. I mean, or we need a 10 out of 12. We need a 12 out of 15 stretch to get us back in the mix. I mean, you know, and I know it's taboo to talk about it over here, not going for the top or not being the best. But the reality of the situation is if you get to third place, you're in the dance. All you got to do is get to third. And, you know, I'm not going to say we're not going to win it, but what I'm saying is you get the third, you're in the mix. It's difficult because of the way the playoffs are set up, which I still don't understand and probably never will. But but just get to third place and you give yourself a chance. Case in point, last year, Sabu got to third and came to our place and beat us up in Sapporo two straight. So it's possible. And I guess Chiba a few years ago won it from third place, won the whole deal. So it's possible. You get the third, you give yourself an opportunity. And that's, to me, that's where our focus should lie, is just winning one game by game and looking and shooting for third place. Because you get the third, you have a chance.
All right, well, I think they have a better chance with you out there. So hopefully you guys can move up a little bit and we'll see you in the playoffs.
Yeah, I hope so. I was given a day off today, but hopefully I'll be back in there tomorrow and get back on the right side of things.
All right, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you again, Bobby. Thanks a million for sitting down with us. It was good to talk to you.
Always enjoy that.
So what caught your ear? What was the thing that stood out for you?
Well, I think, let's see, a couple things. First of all, how many times this year have we heard somebody say, you know, our team, our guys can really pitch, but we don't score many runs. You think?
It's a common theme.
Yeah, it is pretty much the theme. And, well, nobody's scoring runs the way, you know, it's hard. You know, you can see it and you can know the numbers, but when, you know, every game, it's not every game, obviously. I mean, yesterday we had a 9-1 game and a 9-2 game, and that was just in the Central League.
Mm-hmm.
But, when you see so many 1-0 games and 2-1 games, you certainly think, wow, the pitching is good. But when you see it over and over again, what you realize is it's not the pitching, it's the context. I mean, it is the pitching, but it is, you know, it's part of the context. We live in an era when those games are common. It's not that the guys can't hit and the pitchers are suddenly good, but, you know, it's the conditions have changed. So we can see it and we can know it. But it's still, you know, our internal clocks are hard to reset.
Yeah, especially, well, I mean, since I talked about the fact that, I can't remember what show it was, but runs were really, really down, and this is really a problem, and it's getting me down. We've had steady run scoring, per se. I mean, it doesn't happen every week in every game. But it seems like we've had more steady run production throughout both leagues, which is good, except for a couple teams. And I think the Tigers, they're really hitting the dumps right now. They've lost 8 in a row, and they can't seem to score. And even when they score, they one precious run, they can't protect it. But, you know, those things happen, and teams go up and down. The Buffaloes, they're not bad in terms of run scoring. It's just that they're so bad in terms of run prevention, and I think that's been the biggest thing for them.
Run prevention, okay, as in pitching and defense.
Exactly. It's not just the pitching. I mean, as many good things as Bobby had to say about Lee Deho, he doesn't have much range. I like the fact that he said he's an offensive lineman, and I think that's going to be his new nickname. I think we should just call him the lineman. He is a big boy.
Yeah, he is, and he's He's really fun. I'm really looking forward to getting a chance to see him. I have not seen Oryx at all this year. So you know, they've been on my calendar a few times, but always, you know, in Chiba when I had a better thing going at Cebu or Tokyo Dome. So, I am looking forward to that. And a couple of people with Oryx I really want to talk to. And one is Lee Dehoe and Bobby and a couple of other people, Meets Takagoto and so on. So, yeah, the Oryx is an interesting team. I've always been a fan of Oryx. In terms of the players they put on the field, really the pitchers. So, it is interesting that they got Bobby because he's an interesting player. He obviously had some good stuff for the Fighters. Now, the problem with the Fighters is he's not Kensuke Tanaka, which is like, yeah, who is?
Nobody, yeah.
Right, nobody. And as long as they had other, I guess their issue was getting bigger power in the lineup because they had the good defense and going with Mr. Hoffpower and Mr. Sledge and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I say Mr. because I can't ever remember how to pronounce Hoffpower's first name.
Micah.
I say Micah. Okay. Anyway, the Oryx is a fun team, and Bobby's a great guy for that mix. What I really like to listen to him talk about, and I enjoy, is that his mantra is no fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not afraid of this, not afraid of that. You know, just take care of business. I love that, and it's great because, you know, sports are kind of, well, I guess everything in life, we have this chance to be fearless. You know, we're often afraid of things that are inconsequential, but, you know, in sports, although it's these guys' livelihood, if you're afraid of failing, you're going to fail. You know, you're setting yourself up to fail. And it's to see guys go out and do their best and challenge and take risks is the joy of the game.
Yeah, and the part where he said, you know, where people perceive you to be weak or perceive you to have a weakness was really intriguing for me because I like that statement because the life of a hitter is based on mostly failure, you know, 70% of the time if you're a good hitter.
Yeah.
And so when he said perceived weakness, I thought, well, what does he mean by that? And I started to think more, and I thought, okay, well, in other words, maybe there's a hole in his, not in his swing, but in areas of the zone where he's not a good hitter. Let's say he's hitting 120 on pitches down and away, something like that.
Okay.
That means his rate of failure is even higher.
Sure.
But it's not zero.
No, it's not.
And that's his point. You know, they say, well, they perceive it as a weakness. Maybe they want to throw there 10 times. Well, 1 out of 10 times, I'm going to get him. And hopefully it's, you know, in a position where we can score runs and I can be productive. But it's not zero. And that mindset, it's not a weakness. It's just somewhere I fail more than usual.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, that is the case.
Is it confidence? I think it's right what you said. It's just, hey, look, I'm not great here, but I'm not zero. I'm not hitting over.
Well, if you do go in there thinking that that's it, that you're done, you might as well not even go to the plate because you are going to be done.
Yeah.
Now, I think that's a good point. You know, when we talk about weaknesses, we talk about things we don't do well. And of course, it depends on, you know, they'll say, oh, this guy can't, you know, we generalize because when we generalize, it makes things easier to understand. So we say, you know, he can't do this and he can't do that. You know, he can't run. Well, of course he can run. If he couldn't run, he couldn't bat because he'd never get to first base.
Right.
So we overuse those words. And it was fun to listen to him for a couple of reasons. One of the things that was interesting was talking about the difference between playing in Sapporo and Osaka. And I say this.
You mean living or playing? Because it sounded like he was talking about most of the off-the-field stuff.
Exactly. Well, that's in a sense, you know, the far fact is that if you're living in Sapporo, if you're playing in Sapporo for a living, you have to deal with things off the field, wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to him talk about the game is great. He made these what's the word I'm looking for? I guess very astute points, very subtly. One is that how can we win? We can play solid baseball. Well, what's solid baseball? It's doing little things, doing more little things that are going to help your team win.
Mm-hmm.
The other guys are going to do. You're going to do more little things to make the other guys lose than they do to make you lose. over a period of time, and hopefully those things will work out in your balance. They don't always, you know, like, it's not like that. You know, you, it's like, trying to load the dice in your favor.
Right.
You know, even, you know, you try to balance it and shave this edge and shave that edge and add a little weight here, but still it's never, nothing's a sure thing. So anyway, thinking about that, I have to think, or what popped into mind was the fighters, foreign players have to deal with, at least from Bobby's perspective, had to deal with the thought, now I don't want to take a slam at McDonald's or Pizza Hut because, you know, they might sue me or something.
Right.
But, you know, if those are your only choices, you're fairly limited, especially if you're somebody who depends on nutrition and or is particularly vulnerable to weight loss or is not familiar with the culture.
Exactly. You know,
make these things accessible, that's something the fighters would probably be benefiting. You know, just, it's a small thing, it's a tiny thing, but basically made up of tiny things. Winning is made up of so many tiny things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's something Oryx doesn't have to deal with. It's like the travel. Fighters, it's something the fighters are good at because they've had to be good at it, but they don't see these other little things. So, anyway.
Right, and for you guys who don't know the spread, he mentioned the spread, and after Major League Baseball games, they have this huge table laid out with food, and the players, they eat after the games. And in Japan, you just shower and go home, essentially. So there's no, they have some snacks and everything before the game, but after the game, it's basically every man for himself, let's get out of here.
Usually they eat before the game, because they have these, they have for the game because they have these marathon practices. They usually practice 2 hours, home team for maybe 2 hours and the visiting team 45 minutes or an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, they have to have food. So almost, you know, I remember we remember a time saying, man, I gotta go get my noodles.
Gotta go get my ramen noodles before the game, yeah.
You know, after the visiting team bats, you know, they got to rush in and get some to eat so they can stand out on the field without passing out.
Yeah, well, and so, yeah, we did talk about run prevention, and you guys can't see Jim making scrunchy faces while we're on Skype. But, yeah, run prevention, I think they've allowed 353 runs as of games going into Sunday's play. And that's tied for the most in the league with the Sabre Lions, who are 2 games over .500. The Buffaloes are 11 games under .500. And the problem is they've scored 311. That's the fewest in the Pacific League. So they're obviously scoring too few runs and allowing the most in the league. That's a combination that's going to get you a lot of losses. Now, the Lions have been able to overcome that, obviously. And that's a basic combination. It's a basic formula for something that will get you a lot of losses. It doesn't guarantee it because obviously the Lions are being outscored by 7 runs and they're still over .500. So I know you have some numbers about that later. We'll talk about it. But yeah, run prevention is a problem. Look at the guys they have. You know, their top pitcher is, I don't know. Is it Hayato Terahara?
Gee, you have to wonder. I mean, Kisunuki's been good recently. I mean,
Kisunuki, yeah, has been really good.
Who's their best pitcher is the guy who won the last game.
Exactly.
Okay, Nishi's been good.
Nishi has been fairly good.
And Kaneko has not really been good this year. All of a sudden, we have blasts from the past yesterday. Satoshi Komatsu comes out and starts a game and wins for the first time.
First time in 2 years.
Who else is there? Got all guys who are been very good, and this year it's been a melting pot in the sense that it's been a melting pot. These guys have melted. They've reached boiling temperature. They have to throw them out and cool them off or something.
Yeah, things are going. I mean, there's just no continuity. There's no continuity in the rotation. There's the only thing that's been stable is the back of the bullpen with Kishida.
Yeah, you know, okay. He's a B plus guy or a B guy, and Yoshihisa Hirano, who was one of their big starters back in the Terry Collins days, but has had arm surgery since. He's been, you know, he's their been working as a setup guy a bit, and he's been pretty good. And I guess I'll tell you the thing with Oryx, and I just noticed this yesterday. I've been logging the players when they're activated and deactivated. And pretty much right now what they're doing with their rotation is, except for a couple guys, they're just deactivating every pitcher after they start.
Yeah, because they're not going to need him for a while.
They've got like 12 guys. They've got like a 12-man rotation, it seems. So it's Evan McClain, activate, pitch, deactivate. Alfredo Figueroa, activate, deactivate. I mean, it's just these guys, it's an amazing list. Sometimes they'll stay up twice, but it's like they're using a 10-man rotation.
Yeah. Kiyawa had a good two-game stretch, but he's no lock for success. I think he got
hammered the other day.
And they talked about some injury that he might have. So that's a mess. That run differential of what? They're at minus 42 in run differential. It's just, it's a mess. I mean, there's a reason they're in last place, in my opinion. And it's too bad because Lee is having a really good season. This is a Triple Crown winner from Korea. And he's leading, I believe he's leading in RBIs as well as
runs and RBIs.
Home runs. So, I mean, they're wasting a good season from a guy who's been pretty productive. So
he has a chance to win a Triple Crown here.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure about the batting average that he, you know, we always like to see guys who have a little bit of speed and can beat out some infield singles. But he hits the ball. I would like to see a hit chart on him to see if he hits the ball the other way a lot. But it seems that he pulls a lot of hits to me, but he certainly hits the ball hard. Bobby was impressed with him.
Oryx is always an intriguing team, and they've had so many injuries this year. So, well, you know, everybody has injuries, but it's you know, they're always sort of like, what you have to, they go into the season and you think, wow, this is a team that so much could go right for, but you know it isn't.
Yeah, and I did that. I wanted to make them my team that, you know, I had two ugly predictions this season. One was Oryx was going to finish second place, and the other one was that Yuki Yoshikuni of the Yokohama Bay Stars was going to be the breakout player in the Central League, and he just hasn't been the guy I expected him to be, although he was on Saturday night against the Dragons. But
he's had a, you know, recently he's picked it up a bit. He's pitched a little tougher when he's needed to be.
But essentially, I don't mind taking chances. I'll take chances on some teams, and Oryx was a chance, and I took a flyer, and hey, they're in last place, so what?
What does it cost you? Yeah.
I just have to hide my face sometimes when I go certain places, but other than that, no money.
Oh, okay. Well, if I hide my face, that's a good thing, I think. Okay.
All right, well, good luck to Bobby the rest of the season. Good luck to the Oryx Buffaloes. Let's talk about errors. Now, last week I made a statement about Shota Dobayashi of the Hiroshima Carp, saying that, whoa, he's on record pace to make, you know, he's got 22 errors, he's on record pace, that's got to be a record, blah, blah, blah. So I decided to look into it. And boy, was I wrong on that, too.
This comes under the heading of things are not always what we're used to.
Things are like, not always. That's a long heading.
Okay, let's put it this way. Unexpected. Well, yeah, you know, it's like the runs thing right now. It's not the game we're used to. And if you look at errors totals, you realize that it hasn't always been the game we're used to.
Right. So I failed to mention at the time, though, that Dobayashi is still the strikeout leader in the Central League. And so while I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be in the running for Rookie of the Year and get garner a lot of votes, I have to just say right now, I'm going to go with his teammate Yusuke Nomura, the right-hander.
Let me ask you this. Could you vote for a guy who leads, for example, could you vote for a guy as an MVP if he leads the league in errors?
You know, I don't mind that so much. What I'm going to look at is what's his impact on the wins and losses. And if his errors are leading to a lot of losses or impacting the team so much negatively that it doesn't matter what he does on the offensive side, then yeah, I'm going to say that guy's not an MVP. But if his, and again, we don't know. These are all after the fact situations.
Right.
You don't know what the error is going to do, whether it's going to cost them runs or cost them games. It certainly cost their pitchers more pitches.
Fair enough.
But I don't know what the impact is, so I'd have to look at what the impact is. I'm not going to, even if they have a lot of errors. I mean, Masahiko Morino had a season 3 years ago, or I guess it was 2007 when the Dragons won the Central League and won the Japan Series, and he had a lot of errors at third base, but I would have made him the Central League MVP. I wouldn't have minded him being it.
That's kind of a sucker punch, because the guy that we both voted for MVP last year led the Pacific League in strikeouts and errors.
Yeah, oh gosh.
So, good answer, John.
Yeah, well, that's my feeling. I really wouldn't worry about it so much. The strikeouts are going to come with some guys who are aggressive and power hitters at the plate, and that the strikeouts going to come. The errors, you just got to live with some of them. Hopefully the scorers are getting the plays right. You know, you can't always trust what they're doing either.
Again, this is I keep going back to the same analogy, probably more this week than normally, but you know, the game is like a black box, and we don't always know, you know, what's going on inside the box to make the results what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we see the result. The final result, of course, is the season. Who wins?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game shakes, you know, so you take a black box and one team pops out, that's the winner. Okay, we can see that. You shake a game and one team pops out and that's the winner. We can see that. You shake an inning and so many runs pop out, 0, 1, 2, 3, and we can see that. So we can see the results. We can see the concrete results, but, you know, the farther you look into what makes up those results,
mm-hmm.
it becomes more and more like standing between two mirrors,
mm-hmm.
and seeing your reflection in your reflection in your reflection into infinity. No
right.
matter how far you go down, you know, into the details, you can never say, oh, this is how the result should have happened. It should have worked out like this, because it's just too confounding.
Yeah, you're going to find something. Something's there. So
lost the season because this guy's footwork was bad. It'll drive you mad. So try to keep it in, you know, big terms. Of course, what does count is how many games you win, whether you deserve to win those. Well, that's kind of a philosophical argument.
Right. So I looked at the records, the error records for one season, and the most in one season came by a fellow by the name of Tsuruo Otsuka.
Yeah.
And he was a shortstop. And I guess he changed his name. He played under a different name from 1939 to 1942.
Are we talking about Kazuto?
No, it's Tsurugi Yanagida.
Okay,
I did a search on the internet, and it came up with Yanagida, this position player, a shortstop who made 75 errors in 1940.
Okay.
And that makes sense, you know, shortstop, lots of opportunities, blah, blah, blah. But at third base, the record goes to Takeshi Miyazaki, who had 49 errors in 1950 for the Taiyo Whales. So Dobayashi, I think, he's not going to reach that point, we don't think. Or
no,
I don't think.
You know, well, first of all, the equipment's just so much better, and the talent pool is so much bigger. It's hard to get people who are going to make that many hours, errors. The grounds are better, although it depends on who you ask. But the quality of the infields are so much better. Everything's better that it's just not going to happen. Errors have generally, worked their way out of the game, all over the place. You know, both in Japan and the majors, the game isn't what it used to be.
Right.
In a good way.
Right. So then I kept looking, and I said, okay, well, is there a foreigner who is on the list? And I did see a foreigner named Charlie Lewis, who was a catcher.
Oh, that was ages ago.
And he caught 135 games in 1953 for the Mainichi Orions and made 22 errors.
The guy was after the war. Okay, Charlie Lewis. All right.
And then I said, okay, well, who's the all-time leader? And this was absolutely shocking.
Okay. Well, shock me.
A shortstop by the name of Katsumi Shiraishi is the all-time leader in errors with 646, and he made 636 of them at short.
Wow.
What kind of good player do you have to be able to be run out there?
You have to be pretty darn good.
Yeah. It, to
or
be run.
you have to be in a league that's pretty darn bad, which is the way it used to be. I mean, you used to have such a small talent pool that, you know, this is the reason why we have these. It's hard to match historic numbers in today's game, because every year the quality of available players increases slightly. And the difference between Major League Baseball and Japanese baseball, I mean, other than, you know, the bunts and all that, and the pitching patterns, is that the difference is not necessarily in the top two players on the team, although that's going to happen because of this number of teams involved.
Right.
The difference is that at the bottom of the rosters, there are guys who are so much worse than the guys in the major leagues. The guys in the middle of the rosters are worse than the guys in the major leagues. It's not that the star talent in Japan can't compete, and I believe there's a degree to which it can, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
To clarify that, when you're not playing against the highest competition, it's hard to get the highest performance.
I understand that, yeah.
The level's a little lower, so players don't have to be quite as good as they do in the majors. And the reason it isn't as good is because the guys at the bottom, you know, it's basically, if they took the major leagues and they said, okay, all the guys who are in AA and AAA are now made, we're going to make, 150 major league team, or 100 major league teams, we're going to take all the guys from AA and AAA and put them in the major, on major league rosters. Now we've got Japanese baseball. That's got that great range in talent from best to worst. Much bigger range in Japan than there is in the majors. And, you know, Matt Winters, who was a star here with the Nippon Ham Fighters, said, yeah, I mean, that's the way it was. If Nomo was pitching, I know I'd get two strikeouts and hopefully I'd get a hit against the guy that came in after him.
Right, right. Takeshi Miyazaki.
Okay.
49 errors in 1950 for the Taiyo Whales. So, yeah, you don't know how these things are going to impact games, and you don't know, you can't gauge, you know, each player like that. I don't know what the situation was back then, but it just is amazing that they kept running a guy out there. It seems like he played for like 20 seasons.
Well, it was not that far off the norm at that time. I mean, okay, the Taiyo Whales were a terrible team. In a league in which there was an enormous gap in talent between the top teams, I mean, the top teams and the bottom team. They faced very good pitchers, as they do now, but they faced so many guys who wouldn't even be able to put on a uniform. They wouldn't be able to be on a minor league team now.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a far different situation. Now, what did you find? Yeah, I know you looked into the error situation as well.
Yes. Well, as soon as you start looking for error totals, you see that you can't really compare anybody who's playing now to anybody who's playing in the 50s, because the error totals are so much higher.
Yeah.
He's in early 60s. And we're talking about a pitcher's era. This is a golden era for pitchers. Very run scored, but a lot of errors. Okay, so the game has definitely changed.
Maybe it was a pitcher's era. Pitcher's era, because they scored a lot of hits errors. Maybe it was the scoring that kept the ERAs down.
Well, I'm not talking about ERAs. I'm talking about runs.
You're talking about runs a lot, yeah. Maybe the pitchers were able to pitch through all that.
Well, no, because the hitters were not that good.
Mm.
So many poor hitters. There were guys who wouldn't be able to get jobs now. The good players were very competitive, and that's why, you know, guys could have these gaudy batting averages and amazing career totals, because they could fatten up on guys who weren't very good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what I did found, I mean, you did ask about the guys, you did ask last week, who, you know, how often is it that a guy will lead the league in strikeouts and errors, like Shota Dobayashi seems determined to do? It's pretty common.
How common is it?
Here's a list of guys who, now one guy's from the 50s, which was kind of interesting. And that was a Yasumitsu Toyota, who was a big star with the Nishitetsu Lions in Fukuoka in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Great power-hitting shortstop. He was a rookie of the year, great player. He had 45 errors one year, and led, of course, he led the league with 92 strikeouts, which is not an overwhelming total. And when you mentioned the players who were likely to lead the, you know, I don't know if you talked about this on the show, but we were talking about it during the week, players who led the league in strikeouts and errors, and a couple of names came to mind, and Takahiro Ikeyama of the Swallows in the 80s and 90s was my first guess, and my second guess was Masaru Uno, and I hit the nail with the second shot, and Masaru Uno in 1984 led the Central League with 27 errors and struck out 172 times, and then we've got some really good players. I mean, and Uno was a good player.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Is in the Hall of Fame. So now we've got some guys who are pretty much Hall of Famers, although Akira Eto's career was a little short for the Hall of Fame, but we have Takuya Nakamura
has done it.
Akira has done it three times. Of course, we're talking about a situation now where you don't need a lot of errors to lead the league anymore.
Right, he's done it three times. Wow. And the last time being last year.
Right, 2011. 2008, 2009, 2011. Now, 2010, as some of you will remember, he was hurt for about, he missed about 40% of the season, so he didn't have enough time to lead the league in errors or strikeouts.
But he wanted to.
Sure he did, yeah. Okay, who else? We have Akira Eto, who was sort of the prototype for Takuya Nakamura. They're very similar players when they were young.
Yeah.
He had 18 errors in 1998 and 103 strikeouts. And here was a surprise.
That's not a lot.
Oh, it's not. Very few errors to lead the league, but it was, you know, it was one of those years. Okay, that's the era we live in, where if you make 20 errors, you're going to lead the league. So Goshi is definitely going to lead the league in that. Okay, here's another one. Kosuke Fukudome.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense.
120, this is 1999 when he was still a shortstop, third baseman, right fielder, center fielder, you name it, that's what he did.
Well, and I can tell you why, because he failed at so many positions. They wanted him to play short. They threw him out there. He would make a spectacular play here, but make an error on a routine play there. So they had to move him from short. They had to move him from third because he would cost them games there. And then they put him in the outfield, and I won't forget this, late in the season when they had a game to clinch, he dropped the ball, a routine fly ball, in the outfield. So they couldn't hide him. There's no place they could put him there where he wouldn't make errors.
Well, he had the gun, and he turned out to be a pretty good outfielder.
When he figured it out, yeah.
Eventually. So anyway, so the answer is, are you doomed your team to failure if you lead the league in strikeouts and errors? And I would have to say no, because anyway, if you're going to, and this is along with our, I wouldn't be surprised to find out that the guy who has more errors than anybody else in Japanese baseball history is in the Hall of Fame, because you got to play a lot to get that many errors.
Yeah, I mean, how good a regular player must you be that they keep running you out there, regardless of, you know, how you're costing your team extra outs.
So, I mean, so as far as, yeah, is, would I would never rule a player out, and just because of the errors. You have the whole package. You have, you know, if he hits, like, if a guy hits 300 with 30 home runs and a 400 OBP and he leads the league in errors, I'd say, yeah, he's the MVP.
Yeah, well, this guy, Shiraishi, was not that kind of a player. I think looking at the stats, he was a career 250 hitter, basically. And he didn't really hit with power, and he didn't really do much. So, considering he threw the ball around or was imitating Pele out there at short base, at shortstop, I don't see why you would keep putting him out there time after time. Career 256 hitter over 18 seasons, and he played with the Yomiuri Giants for a long time, and finished up his career with the Hiroshima Carp.
No, he doesn't. Anyway, so yeah, so, okay. Well, he was a good enough player to play that, but not enough to be in the Hall of Fame. Okay. Well, but again, these are the guys who have the career strikeout players who lead the Japanese baseball. I think Koji Akiyama is the all-time career strikeout leader in Japanese baseball, and that, you know, you got to be a pretty. He's going to go in the Hall of Fame. So.
Yeah, it doesn't doom your career if you actually produce in between the bad things. Like we were talking about earlier, there's more failure than there is success, yeah. Especially for hitters. So it doesn't really matter how you fail all the time. It's how you succeed.
I don't know. I like Nomura. I like Nomura, too, as the rookie of the year in the Central League. But, you can't tell the season's not over yet.
Right.
And that's out the window.
All right. Well, we'll see what the impact is. Right now, there's something else we wanted to talk about real quick before we say goodbye. Is the run differential now. The Yomiuri Giants in the Central League, they're ridiculous.
They're ridiculous? What's ridiculous about them?
This is crazy. I mean, they're leading in almost every category that you'd want to lead in. They have the best ERA. They're not leading in team batting average. They're behind the Yakult Swallows by 3 points.
Right.
They have the most steals. They're 5 home runs behind the Swallows, but they have 356 runs and 231 runs allowed through Saturday's games. By far and away the best run differential. So you would think they'd be leading the Central League by about 10 games over the Dragons, who have scored about 60 runs fewer. But that's not the case.
It's not the case.
They're only 5.5 games up.
Well, the Giants have been pretty much spot. Now, what we were discussing this was, I looked at the individual totals, the doubles, the triples, the walks, and so on, and the Giants, in terms of the runs they've scored, are pretty normal. You know, you can tell when teams score a lot of runs compared to what they do otherwise. You know, do they get a lot of runners on, and do they hit for a lot of power? In the balance, they've been pretty good. The Dragons, on the other hand, although they haven't scored a lot of runs, they've been fairly unlucky. They've had lots and lots of hits and lots of, you know, they've got a, compared to what the number of runs they've had, they've been fairly unlucky. So they've been lucky in one respect in that they've won a lot of games for the runs they've scored and allowed, but they've scored very few runs and allowed a lot of runs for what they did on the field.
Yeah, I didn't take a look at the splits, and I guess I should have, but they score very few runs at home, but they win those games by one run. Then they go on the road and they get the heads bashed in.
Yep.
And their run differential is plus 13. It's not very many.
Yeah. Well, we see there's lots of the splits. You know, I think that's a good point to make, is the splits can be drastic, because we do have these teams which play. I mean, the Central League is a hitter's league. And then you have Nagoya Dome and Koshien, particularly Nagoya Dome, which is called the best pitcher's park. The other thing, interleague, horrible, strange runs scored and runs allowed splits because of the interleague, where the Pacific League just completely dominated the Central League and beat them badly, frequently beat them badly in so many games that all numbers were a little skewed.
Yeah, I mean, remember that Carp had that record stretch where they couldn't score a run. So, I mean, we saw what happened in that respect.
But in terms, I just want to throw this out. I did crunch the numbers this morning. So thinking about who's been lucky, who's been unlucky, and at first glance, it looks like the Dragons have been lucky because of their record. They've been, I think, they're pretty much where they should be. In some respects, and this goes into the, you know, how far you want to analyze it. You know, for example, you can count doubles, but not all doubles are the same. You can count singles, not all singles are the same. They don't always have the same value. They don't occur in the same context or with the same outs, or the ball doesn't advance as many runners. So, you know, we can't know all the details, but it's sort of like, if you know there's a 60% chance that something's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
random chance, and you try 100 times, you can be certain that you're not going to get 60 results one way and 40 results the other.
Well, that's true.
Never gonna happen like that. You could do it 1,000 times and you'd end up with 614 or something. So the numbers don't always add up in these really, really tiny, in baseball, tiny, tiny, tiny sample sizes. season is not a good sample. But anyway, just to throw my analysis out there without too much ado, who are the lucky teams and unlucky teams in this season? And the unlucky team has got to be the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks. They can't score runs. You know, they must be stranding a zillion runs, still zillion runners. They give up a bunch of runs, more runs than they should, and they don't win as many games as they should with the runs they score and allow. So they've really been just having bad timing. You know, it could be anything that's causing this, but the fact is, when you do that, you expect to win more than the Hawks have. In retrospect, the Lions are another team, which the Lions' record is not that bad, but it should be worse.
It should be worse, considering. I mean, they don't score an inordinate amount of runs, yet they give up the most in the league, tied with the Oryx Buffalo. So you would think that would cost them, since their ERA, their team ERA, is the worst in the Pacific League. You'd think those things equal losing record, and here they are, two games over 500.
Right. So there's lots of things that go into it. But you know, in the end, we were talking about the Olympics at work the other day, and teams being lucky or unlucky. Hey, teams are always lucky. You know, they say, we deserve to win. Yeah. Well, the team that deserves to win is the team that scores the most. That's the way it works.
Well, the team that deserves to win, you can even break that down, is the team that does the little things to put itself in position to score the most and then comes through or forces the other team to make mistakes.
Ideally, yeah. All you can do is do more to make your team win. But you can do... So you can do 10 times more than the other guys, and they can still win because that's the way it works. It doesn't mean the winner doesn't mean they're the best team. It just means they scored one more games than you did. It doesn't make them a better team. It's just that's the way it works.
That's always the way it works, particularly in games like baseball and soccer and ice hockey, where the scoring is limited. When there's basketball and football, you can, because there's more scoring and there's more opportunity to get points on the board, you can have a bigger differential. I mean, you can have a success three times and have a 3-touchdown lead, or you can have success and only have a 9-point lead in football, and that's American football, but that doesn't guarantee you're going to win. But in baseball, if you have a lot of success, it puts you in a really strong position to win. Same with soccer. You have good success three times, you're in an excellent position to win, but it's no guarantee.
So, yeah, I always – all you can do is be Bobby Scales and, do your best and try and not be afraid and do the little things, do as many of the little things as you can and control what you can control and then roll the dice and hope things go well for you because they're not going to go your way, as often as you like.
Well, what is your theory about that? My theory about run differential is it's pretty much overrated in the first place, but, the thing I see with the Dragons is because they win these close games at home, they're comfortable playing with a 1-run lead or a 2-run lead at home. They look good, and they're 18 games over 500, but most of those games are at home. They're pathetic on the road, and this doesn't bode well for a team that has sights on a third consecutive, obviously, Central League championship and then wants to go through the climax series. If they're not at home, if they have to play games on the road, I can see them just getting shut out three quick games and having the series be over. It wouldn't even be competitive.
That's the season, and that's, you know, again, we're talking about something different because the postseason is a smaller sample. I mean, the Dragons can easily will at some point win two straight games or two, three games on the road. Is it a problem? It's weird. The first thing I would want to point out that run differential, the problem with run differential, I guess run ratio is better because run differential, particularly with the Dragons, is not, the runs don't mean the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because a run at Nagoya Dome is, if you score two runs at Nagoya Dome, it looks like a win. If you score two runs at Jingu Stadium, it looks like you're in the game.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you have a chance to, you have a, the runs don't equal out.
Yeah, I understand that. The Dragons at the moment, 34-8.
Right.
At home games, and I don't know how many of these are Nagoya Dome games, but on the road, they're 18-26, and it's just a completely different team once you get it out of that dome.
As tended to be the case for that tends to be the case for teams that play screen parks. It had usually the case for the Tigers and the Dragons. The fight to some degree. So.
The Tigers. You know, they got Lyota, Arai, Batten cleanup for them this past week a bunch of times.
I love it.
You might love it, but that's not a formula for success either. A career backup guy who could never get a starting job is batting cleanup for your team?
Because nobody gave him a chance.
Well, because he wasn't better than the other guys. He wasn't better than the other options.
No, he was with the Dragons. That's why he never got a chance. They never saw anything they liked from him. But I can tell you, he has some quality in him.
I don't doubt that he does. I'm not saying he doesn't have quality, and I know that career backup or reserve is a bad label, but he has never been able to earn a position out there.
Again, that's an objective analysis based on things that we can't look at. You know, you can't see under the hood. You can't see in the black box. But I'm telling you, the numbers he put up in the Western League for the Dragons were outstanding. This is a guy who could play.
Well, he's playing this year. He's having a career year. He's at 285 right now, 286, and
play any
380 on base percentage. I mean, but I don't think he's. Still don't think he's your number four hitter.
Probably not. I mean, they're probably better options, but right now they're struggling. So they went to Craig Brazell. Brazell was struck. We're using him as a pinch hitter, and he says, "I want more time in the batter's box." And they said, "Okay, well, if you go to Naro Hamakyujo down the road in the Western League, you can get more time in the batter's box." So they sent him down.
Hey, you got what you wanted.
Yes, for.
Should be interesting. I'm sure you heard last week's show, and I think in the Pacific League it's going to go down to that last day and that last pitch before all the seedings are going to be set in the Central League. I don't see it playing out that way. I think the only question is third place, I believe. And I like what the Carp are doing. Just like we talked about before the season started, that their pitching is going to carry them and put them in position. And I don't like what Dennis Sarfati looks like at the moment. He doesn't look like a confident pitcher.
What, he changed his hairstyle?
No, I just don't like the things I'm seeing from him on the mound in terms of his stuff. It's just, I like to look for movement, location, pitch sequence and velocity, and I don't like three of the things I'm seeing from him in those respects, but hopefully he'll get it together, and I hope he's healthy. I kind of worry about his health when I don't see the velocity that I saw before. But you said last year that you didn't really see anything in particular that stood out for you.
Well, I didn't, to be honest. I barely saw him, so I know the guys that they're depending on to get outs at the end of the game, Imamura and Mikolajo, are doing fine right now, which is kind of a funny guy because his minor league numbers are perverse. Here's a guy who could never have low ERAs despite not giving up any hits or walks and striking a bunch of people out.
Yeah, but he's doing it for them, and Imamura, 29 consecutive scoreless appearances. Who would have thunk it?
This is a case of somebody writing somebody off a little too early. I mean, he's a 22-year-old kid. So, anyway, I think the Carp are going to do it because I think the Swallows, I was surprised when I did my analysis to see that the Swallows just have not, to see how bad the Swallows' defense is this year.
Yeah, it's different. But they've had a lot of injuries, and they've had to put people maybe in positions where they're not as capable. Let's put it that way.
That is case. I mean, they lost a good center fielder is another issue. They do have a lot of changes. They've lost a good center fielder. They've lost a good third baseman in Miyamoto. They're on about their third shortstop of the year.
But I think when they get it together, I still think they're the third place team and they can make a run, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
I don't think the problem right now is that the pitching is, which is also not that healthy. You need those things to be, pitching and defense is sort of like an engine. It's a complex machine, and when one breaks down, it's really hard to get the other things going.
Okay. All right, well, good luck to those teams. We'll be watching carefully. A reminder, you can send us your comments or questions via MP3 file, and we'll play them on the show. Please keep it less than 1 minute, and we'll play it and address your topic. We look forward to getting them. Send an email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or you can visit our Facebook page and leave us a comment there.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.